They've raised the bar on Rochester Sports Talk. You're in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
Every Tuesday at this time, we talk Buffalo Bills with our buddy Matt Perino covering the team for the Syracuse Post-Standard. You can read his work at syracuse.com. Don't forget about the Shout podcast. But, Matt, on a day where, you know, the Bills win easily in Seattle, you have a two-win Miami team coming in to Orchard Park on Sunday. Can we start with an answer, your take on the great debate of whether or not to send Stanton home to give him the green light there with two outs? What are your thoughts?
Egregious decision making, and that's coming from somebody that spent the last five seasons at third base sending 7, 8, and 9 year olds home with reckless abandon. Okay, that's coming from me, this guy who doesn't, he throws caution to the wind at every turn. I would never have done that, because I think I tweeted it. You see Stanton trying to leg out that double and he almost gets thrown out at second base. I know you're trying to make something happen, I get that. But you have to know the moment. Like, first of all, you're down a couple of runs. You give yourself another opportunity with a couple guys now on base. Put a little bit more pressure on them. Let the pressure mount a little bit and see how they handle it. You're not putting pressure on. You're not going to have another shot like that the rest of the game, probably. So I hated that idea.
Yeah, I'm 100% on that, Matt. And I just what a letdown. What, you know, you're a baseball guy, for folks who may not know. It's your cousin, Andy Perino, the former Padre, Brockport. Yeah, that's Matt Perino. This is so disappointing, because this is an opportunity, whether you're a Yankee fan or a Dodger fan or not, you can recognize what this World Series could have been had we seen two teams at the top of their game. Well, one is at least at the top of their game.
That's the kind of crazy part about this is, like, I know there's a lot of heat on Aaron Boone, like, all season long, I mean, throughout his tenure. Like, this feels like a team that just, it's the little things that's holding them back, like, in these big moments. And to me, you got to point at coaching a little bit on that. Like, I don't know if there's been an emphasis on it, just, like, little mistakes in the field here and there. Like, you know, the two big pitches to Freddie in this series have been horrible mistakes by the pitcher, just placement, like little details, being a little bit too dialed up, or, you know, just going to Nestor in that spot in game one. We could be talking about a 2-1 series here if he goes to Hill in that spot, which I think it's crazy that he didn't. It's a bummer, and obviously I'm a Yankees fan, so I would like this to be a different series, but I got to be honest with you guys. Like, I'm all about the stories, and to me, Freddie Freeman, you know, as a dad watching that clip of him and his dad after the home run, it's like, man, how do you not just absolutely love that? That's the Dodgers have been a cool team to watch. Like, I like Mookie Betts. I like Freeman. I love Shohei. So whatever happens, you'd like a little bit more fight from the Yankees, but the Dodgers are just an absolute unit right now.
Matt, be our ears and eyes of the weekend that you just got back from. I mean, Seattle felt like Buffalo West, and Bills Mafia represented in a way I don't think we've seen in quite some time for a road trip. But you were there. You took in all the sights and all the sounds and probably all the smells of Seattle. Paint a picture for us, pal. How was your weekend in the Pacific Northwest?
It was wonderful. It smelled pretty fishy, to be honest with you. I was down at the Pike Place Market and watching them, you know, as they iconically do, throw the fish around a little bit. There was actually a Bills fan there that you kind of got to wait for. I guess back in the day, they used to just be throwing fish around all day long, but now, like, you got to wait till somebody buys one. And so we're sitting there waiting for a while, because I kind of wanted to see what the hype was about, and one of the Bills fans bought one. And so they did the whole thing, and they let her catch it, and I shared it on social media. It was cool, like, walking around that area of town. I mean, it was just a sea of red, white, and blue, as it tends to be on these road trips. I tell people, most road trips, if there's a condensed area of the city where people kind of congregate, you'll tend to see a bunch of Josh Allen and Bills jerseys just walking around. But on the scene, to have Sean McDermott and Josh Allen react the way that they did, two guys that have been in this setting now for 7 and 8 years and have seen all the great turnouts by the Bills fans over the years, for them to react that much to it in the moment kind of tells the story of how unbelievable it was. Because that 12th man, we were talking about it all last week. Like, what's it going to be like to go on the road in that environment? And at times, it didn't feel like you were playing a road game,
right?
If you're the Bills.
That's something, right? It's a testament to the Bills Mafia. Matt, there are positives to come out of that. One, I'd like to talk about, Your thoughts here on Keon Coleman as we're at the midway point here of his rookie season, and every week I come away a little more impressed here, and what exactly maybe having Amari Cooper on the other side has helped for that young receiver.
100%, and it's funny because we talk a lot about Brandon Bean learning from past experiences. You know, one of the things that, you know, if you give him the time rewind button, he always talks about going back and getting somebody to help lead Josh Allen as a rookie, right? Like, you know, he went out and they got Derek Anderson halfway through that season, and you saw the shift. He said he wished he would have gotten it somebody for him sooner. I think what they ended up realizing here is that they go out and they get Keon Coleman. They like a lot of things about him. Of course, there's some veterans in his room, but there's not really any veterans that have been where they want Keon Coleman to go. And so I think when you go out and you trade for Amari Cooper, who can kind of come in here, bring all of that experience, the five Pro Bowls, the fact that everybody talks about him as a route runner, somebody that could be a guide for this young player and take some of the pressure off. Like, that's another part of this. It's like, I think Keon Coleman needed Amari Cooper just from the perspective of now defenses can't key on in on him. Like, when he's out there with Mac Hollins, the defense is shifting all of their focus over to zero. Now with Amari Cooper there and the fact that you get to kind of spin the wheel a little bit more in terms of who you are as a passing game, I think that unlocks him quite a bit. And it's his swagger now that I've seen over the last 2 weeks take a huge jump. He's always been super confident. It's kind of, he's got this quiet confidence to him. But with Cooper arriving, like, it's felt like that's, you're seeing the true Keon now in ways that, you know, I'm not sitting here saying that Amari Cooper has somehow unlocked this in 2 weeks' time. But the pressure coming off and him now getting to say, okay, I can go out every game and the weight of the world or the weight of this passing game isn't necessarily on my back. We have Amari Cooper. I can just kind of go out there and play free. And that's what he looks like. I mean, the way he bulldozed the cornerback, 29, on that one play, I mean, that's going to play in highlight reels all season long. And then, oh, yeah, mossing Tyreek Woolen, which I think is something that will also be in the reel.
So, Matt, I don't like that my mind goes to this place after a player has a good game or a string of good games, and I guess it's a first-world problem. But after James Cook has the kind of performance that he has again on Sunday against Seattle, and he's had these games throughout the course of this season, James Cook, at his position, is quickly emerging as a star, if not one of the biggest stars, at the running back position. And I look ahead to what decisions the Bills are going to have to make around James Cook. And it's nothing imminent. They don't have to do anything right away. But I'm curious, do you get the sense that Cook is somebody that the Bills will shift their philosophy on and actually pay at that position? Or do you think Cook, down the road, and there's so much that can happen, it's so many variables, so I'm not asking you, hey, where's Cook going to be 3 years from now? Nobody knows. But do you think he's done enough with the Bills where they would actually consider breaking the bank at that position?
If you would have asked me this question 6 weeks ago, you probably would have gotten a different answer. But I think what we're seeing now in the NFL is a shift quietly back towards the importance of the running back position. And I think James Cook right now is sitting there watching the Ravens and the Eagles and is absolutely beside himself with excitement because their production and the way they've changed those two offenses, Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry I'm talking about, I think is going to change the dynamic of how teams value these elite running backs. And make no mistake about it, James Cook is healthy. He's a top five elite running back in this league. He's second in the league in touchdowns now at 7 rushing touchdowns this season. We know already what he means to the passing game. So if you're the Bills and you're thinking about the valuation of going out and paying a top-tier wide receiver, which could get you into the 20s, high 20s per season if you're getting an elite guy, and of course you could draft somebody, I get that, or spending your money at the running back position where you could probably get into the mid to high teens on a yearly deal if you get this thing done early enough, and you know the value of James Cook to your offense with Aaron Cromer in place and Joe Brady, who has obviously put a lot of emphasis on the run game. I don't think it's a crazy idea that the Bills value that, what he brings in terms of the versatility and the skill set, and he looks like the real deal. But again, Ray Davis, didn't he feel like a lot in March, like this is a play for the future, so that in 2 years when James Cook comes up, we're not hamstrung into having to pay him. But at the same time now, this could be the identity of their offense, the way that these two guys any given week can really put a defense in a bind. And they're going to continue to add to the wide receiving core, likely in the draft. I'm surprised they didn't get more aggressive with it after they got Keon and adding another guy in the draft. But I think they're going to start doing that year after year. So I've shifted. I was no way Cook is going to get another deal in Buffalo to, I think it's very possible.
Matt Perino, Syracuse Post Standard Shout Podcast, our guest. Matt, next Tuesday night, you know, in the real world, you're going to have all this, we're the so-and-so network, and we are going to call this race for this political candidate. Here in the sports bar, we're going to call the race in the AFC for the East for the Buffalo Bills. It's over. It's done. We are calling it at this point. Where do you think the Bills sit big picture right now in the AFC? Because you see Baltimore taking a little half step back there. They're not even leading their division anymore. So could the Bills mm-hmm. be a two or three? Could actually they make a run at Kansas City here, knowing they've got that head-to-head coming up?
I think they definitely could take a run at Kansas City. I put out those three teams' remaining schedule, and I asked Bills fans who has the easiest, and I think the majority of people think it's the Chiefs. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they end up with the one seed. They're sitting there at 7-0, but I still think that there's a couple of tough division games for Kansas City that they tend to lose every season. And listen, when you start undefeated the way that they have, the games get like considerably harder. I think the Bills can, you know, make a bit of a statement if they go on a little bit of a run here into that Chiefs game, and then they knock off the Chiefs at home. And, you know, maybe that's their first or second loss. Then you can kind of, you know, maybe play that momentum game a little bit. I think the Bills have proven no matter where they go or play. I mean, they're, you know, a couple plays away from winning that game in Houston. And you could be talking about a 7-1 team right now going into a very manageable stretch. I agree with you. I'm calling the division for the Bills as well. But I do think the Miami Dolphins have a chance to get – there's a chance they can get a little hot here over the next couple of weeks. And I think that their season's on the line. Like, not only the division – chances for the division. I mean, they lose another game, and now you're starting to put them in the Jets category of, are these coaches going to make it through the season? So I think we're going to see a very big time effort from the Dolphins. I think that it'll be enough. Who knows? The Bills have absolutely owned this rivalry when they've been at their best, when they've been fully healthy. But you know, as an aside, like you know, we see this the last couple days. The Los Angeles Rams are allowing Tre'Davious White to seek a trade.
Yeah.
Stephon Diggs, unfortunately, goes down in Houston. Jordan Poyer has been one of the worst safeties in the NFL this season. I know a lot of people think the Micah Hyde thing is something they're clinging to for later this season. I don't know how much that is a real thing. I really do. That's not any reporting. It's just reading the tea leaves kind of thing. I think they like the group that they have in their building. And I think they like DeMar Hamlin so much. And that's why Mike Edwards hasn't been on the field. And I know a lot of Bills fans are like, man, why do you go out and sign Mike Edwards if you don't even give him a chance? And it's like, I think they wanted to develop some continuity between the guy that earned the starting job, Hamlin, and Taylor Rapp. And I think week after week, we're seeing them be a little bit better as a combo. We're seeing Taylor Rapp really ascend to one of the leaders of that defense. And I think the big picture storyline is here, Brandon Bean really was a visionary in the way that he kind of retooled this entire roster. I know everybody called it a transition, but a lot of it was addition by subtraction, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit crazy to think how much dead cap they are carrying, and yet they still have enough talent there on the field. And I think the continuity is a big piece of that. You bring it up, Matt. And I want to talk about another thing you just brought up regarding Sunday and regarding the Dolphins. And we'll talk a little bit about whether or not the Bills are done here before the trade deadline a week from today. But the opponent on Sunday, you mentioned a desperate Dolphins team, and they're going to need a win. But hasn't that been the case for the last couple of weeks? And I know that Tua wasn't there. But if you're a professional, and I know everybody will say, well, they're professionals. They're going to come in, and they're going to be motivated to do their best. I don't know that I see Mike McDaniel as a guy anymore that has that locker room under his control, that has guys that are going to run through a wall for him, or that they view Tua as this threat in the offense, somebody that can unlock this next level. When you look around the NFL and you see a guy like LaFleur in Green Bay do what he did while Jordan Love was out with Malik Willis, if you are a professional and you take note of that, you're wondering, why are we losing games the way we're losing games to bad teams if we're the Miami Dolphins? I have zero faith that the Dolphins are going to come into Orchard Park and make it a game on Sunday against the Bills, and maybe I'm naive for that.
No, I don't think you're naive. I think those are all really great points. I'm more just saying that the Bills aren't going to take them lightly and expect a pushover, because they've been a team that, even with Tua, hasn't lived up to the expectations I think a lot of people had for them. But I'm in line with everything that you just said there. And if you look at last week's game, and, you know, you're going up against the Arizona Cardinals team, you know, 307, two touchdowns for Kyler Murray. That makes sense, right? James Conner only averaged 2.7 a carry, but had a couple big runs in that game. It was more so, to me, the lack of ability for them to separate offensively that stuck out. And I'm wondering if, coming in here, Buffalo is going to be, Highmark Stadium is going to be absolutely rocking. And if you think about it, it's got to be in the back of Tua Tagovailoa's head. Two of the last three times he's been knocked out of a game has been against the Buffalo Bills. And this is a defensive front now. You know, we'll see about Terrell Bernard. It'll help if they can get him back. Sean McDermott's been a little bit iffy on that when he spoke after the game yesterday. So we'll track that over the course of the game. But this is a Bills front, especially Greg Rousseau. And now you add Von Miller back to that mix. Ed Oliver is looking healthier by the week. I think that Tua could potentially be under siege on Sunday, and that is not a good recipe for the Miami Dolphins.
Matt, you can't ask the Bills players, McDermott, or anybody about this, but we can certainly talk here in this format. The Colts, the week after here, and Danger and I were trying to come up with an instance. I don't ever recall a quarterback tapping out and saying, I need a breather. And maybe that was a factor, but certainly the stats don't lie. Anthony Richardson struggling. Is that a good thing that Joe Flacco is going in, or is this actually giving the Colts the best chance to win against Buffalo here in 2 weeks? The Colts, by the way, on Sunday Night Football against the Vikings this week.
I mean, I get it from a coach's perspective why Steichen's making this decision. And I've seen a lot of discourse on social media over the last couple hours about, all right, well, what do you say? How do you keep Anthony Richardson in there? And what do you say to the guys on the roster about, like, really, truly trying to win? And my one pushback to that would be, like, if any player came to me as Steichen or the GM sticking with Richardson, I'd show him Joe Flacco's stats from that playoff game last year. You know, you're only going to go so far with that player. And don't get me wrong, he's been really good this season when he's played in Indianapolis. Like, I think that they can make a run at that division now, especially with what's going on in Houston. But I just think that when you spend a top five draft pick on a player, that's an investment that you have to make, and you have to see it through. I mean, does he even have 16 full starts yet? I don't think he does, because he went out last season.
He's got 10.
10. That's crazy to sit there and think, in an AFC with the Chiefs, Bills, and Ravens, that you're competing with a Super Bowl for Joe Flacco, to me, is just, it misses the mark, and you're going to end up basically or you have, as an organization, have made the decision after 10 games that Anthony Richardson isn't it. And in that case, I'd look to move him before the deadline. You're fine, do that. Like, yeah. Try to get a draft pick back, and then start planning for the future and go all in on Joe Flacco this year, which maybe Cleveland should have kept Joe Flacco around last year. I mean, Jameis Winston looked pretty good last week. But it's an interesting situation, and I think the timeline for quarterbacks is shorter now than it ever was before. And I don't know if a Josh Allen, and I know he's a unicorn, he's a 101 example, but he doesn't develop the way that he developed if they had the same lack of patience, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, back in 2019 and 2018.
I think to myself, and I look back at that, and I want to ask you if you think the Bills are done here before the trade deadline, before we run out of our time together with you. But I feel like with Richardson, and just with the NFL in general, you know, you just know if you've got the dude. And even though it took Josh Allen some time and statistically it wasn't there right away for him, I think we all knew within the first 6-7 games that Josh Allen was going to be the dude. They certainly know that they have their guy in Washington. Chicago feels pretty good. Denver feels pretty good about the choices that they've made. Where you look at the flip side, if you hang on or you say, you know, we think he's the dude, we kind of think Daniel Jones could be the guy or Anthony Richardson could be the guy. Nah, next thing you know, you're stuck paying a guy $40 million a year and he sucks. I get what you're saying about the lack of patience, but I also think that if we were there, we would probably recognize what everybody in that locker room already recognizes, and that is Anthony Richardson is just not the dude for Indianapolis.
Yeah, but then you have to have, to me, I agree with everything you just said there, and I think the problem now as an organization becomes, do we have the people in place that we trust to evaluate these players? Because it's such a misstep at 4 overall. To me, I'd have heads rolling along with it. If you're done and you're looking to move off of Anthony Richardson, I think I'd want to move off of that general manager. Who, by the way, it's been retread after retread under Ballard, right? Like Phillip Rivers, Matt Ryan. Now they went and they drafted a quarterback, and it's one of the biggest misses in recent history. And now You're on Joe Flacco. It's been kind of an unbelievable run. And listen, you can't fix it just by keeping Flacco and doing these retreads year after year. You're going to have to find somebody that can evaluate that position. So that's another big conversation that I think is going to be happening over the next couple of months in Indianapolis.
Matt, real quick, trade deadline next Tuesday. What do we expect here? I'm sure the Bills are talking to people, but what are you hearing here? What might we expect?
Yeah, I think going out and getting a defensive tackle makes the most sense. You've seen, you know, them get real banged up at that spot. And when you're talking about a wrist injury with Dwayne Carter, now you're starting to wonder, okay, he's on IR. Maybe he can get back in 4 weeks. Maybe it extends to 5, 6, or 7. But either way, do you feel comfortable if an Ed Oliver gets hurt or Daquan Jones? You do not have enough depth at that spot right now. So if you got to carve out another spot somehow by going out and getting a defensive tackle that you can kind of add in the mix. And listen, that's at the same time admitting that Austin Johnson has taken a little bit of a jump in the last couple of weeks. You can see him starting to get comfortable in the scheme, what they're asking him to do. He kind of plays a little bit of both the one technique and the three technique. I know he had the interception. I thought his get off in the third and fourth quarter was noteworthy. Like I had to do a double take and see if that was 91 or 98. He was flying off the ball against the Seahawks. So that's a huge deal. If he's gonna become a dude in their second level or their second part of their rotation, that's huge. But I think you want to add numbers just to guard against the chance of injury. And that's what the Ravens did today by going out and getting Deontay Johnson. I think that they're guarding against Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, any of those guys getting banged up, and now they have more numbers to kind of throw at you. I think the Bills have to do that at their defensive line spot. There's a couple of edge rushers out there as well, but I think they're a little bit deeper there. So we'll see. I know a lot of people want safety, but I think they like their safeties. And I guess the Micah Hyde softball or layup is always there if you need it.
Matt, what do you got on tap here at Syracuse.com and this week on the Shout Podcast?
Yeah, we got a show tomorrow. The Staples Show. We'll have the preview show later this week. I'm going to try to catch up and link up with Marcel Louis-Jacques at some point this week, but travel schedule, everything, I don't know if that's 100% yet. We'll have you covered at the site, everything going on. We'll have the Terrell Bernard watch, as I know a lot of Bills fans are hoping he gets back for the Dolphins game, and the usual.
Matt, appreciate the time, and you're absolutely right on the Yankees here. Thanks so much, Daddy.
Take care, boys.
You got it. There's Matt Parrino covering the Bills for the Syracuse Post-Standard. Glad we had a little extra time there with him to kind of get through some stuff. I love our conversations with Matt so much, and it's weird. It's one of those weeks where there's not a lot to complain about right now with the Buffalo Bills, just given what we saw most recently. And, man, I hope that doesn't change going into this weekend. I don't think it's going to. I can't give Miami any credit, even though they're a divisional opponent.
I love how Matt brought up the analogy, because we said that, like, you bring in Josh Allen, like, who's he talking to in the room? Nathan Peterman? No. Let's go get a Derek Anderson. The idea that Amari Cooper, okay, like somebody with some cachet. Certainly, Khalil Shakir is good, but he hasn't been in the league that long. That can help a Keon Coleman.
He's a star.
Yeah.
He's a star who's been in the league, who's been through adversity, who's been with a few teams, who handles himself a certain way. He's a professional. He handles himself a certain way. And you know, Coleman has that quiet confidence to him. And we saw it immediately when he was drafted by the Buffalo Bills. Maybe there is a little bit of that Amari Cooper that's rubbing off on Keon Coleman. It's unlocking a next level of effort from the Bills' rookie wide receiver. Can't wait for Sunday. We'll have the action for you here on The Fan Rochester. Our pregame coverage gets underway at 9 a.m. Sunday morning. Kickoff just after 1 o'clock on The Fan.
I know you were more focused on the Monday Night Football game. I was with the Yankee game last night from the get-go, and when I was watching this at the beginning, like, I say, what am I watching? What is this? What? And then I go to social media, and my thoughts were confirmed by all Yankee fans. I have thoughts on this here, and how that set a terrible tone last night. And oh, look who wants to be the new head coach of the New York Jets. Okay, sure.
Saw a rule that needs to be changed from last night's Monday Night Football game as well. I will explain, and we'll get to Amerks head coach Mike Leone, who joins us here in about a half an hour. Stay in the sports bar here on The Fan Rochester.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan Rochester.